I'd like to talk about joining the mafia today. And I hope that no one has had any actual life experience with any mafia, because then would be too sensitive. I'm using the word very lightly. During my years living in Lucknow to be with Punjaji, I started to call a particular phenomenon Papaji's mafia, because we used to call Punjaji Papaji, so Papaji's mafia. And the first sign of the mafia was when a friend of mine was having trouble with how to extend her visa so that she could stay in India. And she thought, if only someone would steal my passport. And as she thought that, someone did so. Unfortunately, didn't help with her visa situation, but... Another friend was having lunch with Papaji, and it was mango season. Or it might have been even better mafia situation. It wasn't mango season, and there were mangoes. And Papaji was handing out a mango to each person sitting at the table. And this friend of mine was in a really bad mood. And Papaji just really looked her in the eye and handed her a rotten mango. and smiled at her. Another way that the mafia was in action, Papaji's mafia, was when sometimes people would go to ask him a question that was a pretty important question. But I just want to see, like, do you need pillows or something? Lorraine, Annetta? You need, oh, okay. Okay. What about a wall? Would a wall work? You sure? Lorraine? Okay. You're not being like my friend with the rotten mango.
I have a blanket if anybody needs one.
She needs to lean against it.
Probably slightly because my bed and bedding just got really wet. But, yeah.
If you can pass this back.
You want this?
Sit on this? You want to sit on this?
No? Let's just get settled first. There's actually, like, so much space here in here, and there's even a yoga mat to lie down on.
With shower. So,
really? With shower, okay. Jeff G, there's space up here. You got it? Okay. There's a cushion free if someone back there would like a cushion. And another blanket. Dripping. Maybe it's okay. Come a little closer. Good. So sometimes someone would go to Papaji, would approach him, and would ask if I could give teachings, if I could give satsang. And Papaji might say, And many many times, several times. That person went away describing their experience of Papaji asking them to give satsang, to give teachings. But instead of correcting this impression, Papaji would kind of, in English we say, stir the pot. He would sometimes encourage people to spend time together because they did not get along. He would sometimes allow someone to have the impression that Papaji had sent them to give teachings to this world as a messenger from Papaji himself, so that that person could go through that experience and come back. Let's not say so that, but there was that option, that the person could go through that experience and come back and say, that was very lonely up there. We hear about humbleness, we hear about egolessness, and it can start to sound like a heroic space, a well-defended fortress space that we could conquer. But actual humbleness or egolessness is not very fun at first or a lot of time, because it is living in the middle of what we know we cannot control and sometimes or many times don't like, and being that shaky. So with or without a Papaji around, life does these things like raining. Crying. And it's not to set up a kind of goal of taking misfortune as, or pretending that what we don't like when it's happening to us, we really like. There was a civil rights worker in the city where I grew up in Atlanta in the United States who died in the last year. And at her funeral, this wonderful sentence was said about her, that she did not quarrel, she did not argue with life. So this is an interesting thing to say about a civil rights, let's say, fighter. Her life was dedicated to not only inner transformation, but also applying her energy to change some outer structures. So where I grew up, when my parents were growing up, there were separate toilets and separate water fountains for black and white people. Like, this is my parents' generation only. Just imagine the mind that wants a separate water fountain. So how to apply our energy outwardly in that way without quarreling with life, without fighting life? Just, I want to show you this book that I'm reading now. Gemma was saying, but you're putting a mark on every page. And I said, yes, I know. It's almost literally true. There's this person that I'm really happy to know about. He was born in 1920. And he was also a kind of freedom fighter. and his inner and outer work of transformation very much went together. And he says that when he's trying to describe his inner experiences, he said, I can imagine this is very hard to understand, and you can imagine that this is very hard to express. And he says, the reason that it's so hard to express and to understand is that we have the very bad habit of believing things are outside of our control, that they either come to us or don't, that they are stubborn as mules, that we will never be able to make them do what we want. Translation, that we are poor unfortunates, creatures forgotten by the universe, and that we, free, generous, and heroic beings, cannot obtain the responses from things which we feel are our due. That's true. We are in a battle against things, but it's not the things' fault. It would be so simple to catch them where they live and not somewhere else. So to catch life where it lives and not somewhere else. And that place where they live is not outside. So I'm just going to repeat a few of the key lines that really speak to me. Because he's not talking about this sort of idea that's going around these days that we create our own universe in the way that that's usually spoken. So we're relating to life or to things as if they are as stubborn as mules. That we are poor things, poor, unfortunate, unlucky things, forgotten by the universe. So we are also free and generous and heroic, but poor us, forgotten by the universe. And that universe forgetting us is why we can't find a way to communicate with our life. So he agrees that we are in a battle against things. And he also says it's not the thing's fault. If we could just simply catch things where they actually live, and that place is not outside. So I was talking about some difficult emotions that usually happen on retreat. In the instructions this morning. The usual way of being with emotions that we don't like. Is with tension. Is with secretly believing that it is something that is against us. Our own experience is against us. That's often how we feel. If we have a sense that life is disobedient, it is free to disobey, then we could take our challenging experiences as signs of life. Also as signs of egolessness. Things are not happening the way I would control them to happen if I could. But it's interesting that this man, Jacques Lucéron, is not saying we just have to accept what's happening. He's saying there is a way that we can come into a responsive connection with our experience. He says, with things. It's very tricky, though, because sometimes when we want to really be participants in our life, we can get caught up in trying to trick our experience again into being what we think it should be. Does that make any sense so far? Let's say, any question so far?
Can you say that last part?
Let's see. Yeah. One, two. One, two. So one is this potential for participating in life. So there is a responsiveness that happens. So, for example, I'm in a bad mood and the guru gives me a rotten mango. I can laugh about it with him, not against me. There's a meeting. And maybe then, for example, I turn the mango over and the other side is not rotten. Like, sometimes there's an actual, such a difference in perception. We're open to something that we were not open to before. And it seems that miracles happen, or it seems that things actually change. Or two, one, there's not so much separation. Two, we get back into being tricky. And by trying to feel that communication that is beyond communication, that responsiveness, we start to get tricky again and try to control our experience. We try to, really, I'm resisting my experience and I'm pretending to let it be, or to love it, or to be gentle with it. But what I really, really want is for it to go away, because I think it means that I'm wrong. It's not just that it's uncomfortable. The uncomfortableness is never too much in any one moment. But I can't stand the thought that I believe that the fact that there's anger blossoming in my chest right now, or whatever, means I'm forgotten by the universe, despite my specialness. So when we find ourselves in the two, that I hate my anger because it's an insult to me, it's again simple. It can be again simple. It's another experience that we are bigger than, that we can participate in. We can say, even if it is an insult, bring it on. Okay. Because whatever it would be insulting is not what I really am, is not all that I am. This man that I'm reading from, Jacques Lucéron, was, as a teenager, he organized a movement in Paris to give correct information about what was actually happening in Europe as Nazi Germany was moving across towards France and then taking France. And sorry, actually this happened after France fell. And then his group of several hundred young men who were running through the streets of Paris delivering illegal newspapers was joined into one of the really big, it's called resistance movements, but we could call it freedom movements in France. And then he was arrested when he was 23. And he was in a cell for 6 months, around 6 months. And when he was let out of the cell, it was a while before he could stand to get into the transport that took him to a concentration camp where he lived, where he was one of the people that helped others also live by interpreting German, French, and later Russian among the people who were there living in fear every day. of the 2,000 people that went into the concentration camp the day that he went in, he was one of only 30 to survive. And he's talking about not making enemies, not taking things, not taking challenges as marks against us. We could even say not taking them as problems. He talks about not trying to be strong when it's really challenging situation. If we try to be strong, he says, in the really challenging situation, we will be destroyed. He talked about the experience of watching and hearing the news of humanity driven by an idea coming towards France, taking so many people. As a second blindness in his life. And he said, I'll explain more in a moment, but he said, this second blindness helped him discover, as he saw freedom being taken away around him, helped him find the resources in himself to discover freedom, where freedom lives. He said this second blindness was as demanding as the first, demanding in something. Where'd you find it? I can hardly turn the pages for so many of these little stickers that I put on here. This time I found freedom, just as present and demanding as what he had found earlier in his life. So if I tell you that when he was 7.5 years old, he was in an accident that blinded him, and that the same person did all of the things that I've just described. He was physically completely blind. And he sees his first blindness as his biggest happiness. I mentioned him the first evening. Because his physical blindness helped him find the resources, and we can feel what helps us find our resources. To find the light in him where it lives. So he said, 9 years before he was arrested by the Gestapo, thank you. 9 years earlier, the outer light had been taken from me. This time, outer freedom was taken from me. 9 years earlier, I had found the light again in myself, intact, which means completely whole, and even strengthened. This time I found freedom there, just as present and demanding. Within a few weeks, I understood that fate expected the same work from me a second time. I had learned that freedom was the light of the soul. Reminding myself unceasingly, so without stopping, that freedom exists. And therefore reminding everyone I met that freedom exists. This had become for me the same unquestionable duty as keeping alive the light behind my closed eyes. There was no other reason for my entering the resistance movement, or we could say the freedom movement. The first blindness, his parents also did not take as a misfortune. Amazing. They kept him in the same school where the accident had happened. That sounds like a torture, but instead of putting him into a blind kid's school, he was able very naturally to learn how to navigate inwardly and outwardly. And what I found so inspiring from Jacques Lucéron is the way he talks about what helps him see. Which is love. When he believes in his sadness, when he starts to let himself compete, so not just see that things are different, but see that something is better or worse, to judge, the light went away. The light that helped him actually see the table, the door, without any light going through his body into his brain. When he allowed a natural contentment and joy to be, the light was strong. So there was nothing that was worth giving up the light for, not even being interrogated by the Nazis, getting into a fight with them. Would have meant leaving his light. So he stayed with his light. It's really not easy when we feel that we're right and something or someone else is wrong. I find it's really not easy to stay with our connection. To fight to stay with our connection if needed, rather than to go into fighting about right and wrong. And I hope it's very clear that this doesn't mean not being allowed to be involved in politics if one feels so called. So if we could be inspired to sometimes be willing, if we feel a loss or a pain or a problem, that maybe it's not a punishment, and maybe it's not something that necessarily needs to be fixed in the way we think it should. If we could almost hunt this kind of challenge without practicing negativity, without practicing drama, but hunting the places in us that get triggered. So earlier, the crow said, 1, 2. Even if there's something that we consider a problem, what if we join into the situation? If we participate in that. So we can start to see very simply if there's some way that cause and effect is going on and that we are somehow adding to the suffering. If there's some habit that's helping to cause this difficulty. But without going to 2 from the 1, which would be to blame ourselves, probably. So that can mean that things that happen in our life and in other people's lives, things that we would not wish on anyone, can still serve us. help us into our resources that we have, that we do have. Yes.
And the other three things, I think you kind of mentioned it before about
okay.
if we do go to two, it's still okay.
That's one.
Oh,
and we can call it three. That's good. Yeah.
So okay is one and two is blame yourself.
Yeah. Which is okay.
Which is okay.
Can you repeat?
Sure. Actually, I would like for you to repeat. A little more loudly so that everyone could hear.
One, two, on it.
Your question.
My question. Oh, could we have a three?
And what was the three?
One.
One.
So. Did you understand? Okay. Not surprising. So, one is whatever may be going on is okay, and we can kind of, so to speak, work with it because we're participating in life. We're not kicked out of life just because there's anger or fear or shyness or confusion or anything. Two is I think I'm wrong, so I kicked myself out because maybe I believed whatever conditioning. So two is I'm wrong or they're wrong or something like that. And he was saying, what about three, when I noticed that blaming is going on? And I said, that's one, it's okay. Mm-hmm. But we can call it three. Because it's really important. Yeah. Yes?
To what extent do you think this is a quality that can be developed?
Yes.
Is the insight per se sufficient to enable people to go one, two, three? Or is this a muscle that can be built up?
Yes. It is. I think it involves lots of practice. Yeah. Lots of practice. And you used the word muscle. Sometimes, let's say, when I see that there is blame, that I think I'm wrong, and I feel ashamed that there is fear, or that there is, what's your favorite emotion?
Anger.
Anger, okay. So do you sometimes feel embarrassed when there's anger? Or afraid of your anger or resistant to your anger? Okay. All three of those things at different times or one of those? Embarrassed, afraid, resistant.
Well, I think once the fire is raging, then maybe not that subtle to notice.
Okay. So what about a moment before it's raging or when it's not such a big deal?
Yeah, I can do that.
And what is the, what makes it two? For you.
For me, giving myself time, stepping back a little bit.
That would be coming back to one. I'm going really slowly, so there's anger.
You need to.
And what allows anger to float you away from your connectedness?
Well, believing in the anger, identifying with it.
So, okay, without using the word identifying, what happens for you? Please.
Well, I would say there's no space between myself and the anger.
Okay.
But I connect with it. I see it as real.
Okay. So before you see it as real,
story,
before you believe the story, it's like not even a second, maybe. Maybe check a few times. Hmm. Check when it's blazing, check when it's just like a minor irritation or frustration or, before the story takes over, before I think that's all there is, before I can't stop myself, feeling what happens. Mm. Okay? Yeah. We need to do that, like, many times, I think. That's one muscle. then let's say I think I'm right and something or someone else is wrong. Let's say someone else is wrong, because that's usually harder. What would make it possible for us any way to stay? With looseness, let's say. Even if I think I'm right and there's some heat, there's some contraction, and there's a little bit of space, what would allow me to stay?
Well, literally for me, it would be to breathe.
Okay. Okay. And, okay, anyone else?
Yeah. Honesty.
Honesty. Okay. Anyone else?
Understanding that they're in some kind of story themselves that they're not conscious of and they're suffering.
Okay. Understanding that the other person may be suffering, so forgiveness.
Maybe love of life.
Courage, love of life.
Willing to admit that you may be wrong.
Willing to admit that you may be wrong. So all of these things could be describing something very similar. So seeing that my perspective is one perspective, it's also missing a lot. It's missing the whole other person, basically. And it's so the love of life is what I'm saying, connection, or what Jacques is calling light. He's Jacques to me now. Yeah. So what would help us stay with the love of life, or with the connection, or with the ability to see the other person as a real human being who is lovable, even if they are wrong, even if they are right? So breathing, sometimes, if maybe we have used that tool as a thing that helps us remember. I'm just going to say, in case I forget, I would say this is a kind of moment where it's worth applying some little bit of pressure, which develops some little bit of muscle to help us stay back.
Pressure where? What do you mean? Pressure on yourself? Pressure.
I don't mean pressure like as the way we usually say I put pressure on myself, which would be disconnecting. Mm-hmm. We could use, instead of the word pressure, intensity of remembering how much better the love of life, or any other way of describing connectedness. Even when the horses are dragging me, sometimes I can stay back anyway, which means I could, like, let the horses go. And maybe I really fall. And it hurts. And anyway, that's so much better. My own connection I want to say at all costs. Lenny G?
What if you see yourself kind of in an opposite position where at times you need to be stronger to stand up for yourself, mm-hmm. and that is always difficult anyway?
Yeah.
And then somehow with this, then you would be, you know, like play into that, like, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, the Indian culture, sometimes, you know, there's always this
persuade you to do something that maybe you don't want to do. I mean,
yeah.
What do you do with that? Or what do
Good.
I do with that?
Good. Yeah. What do you do with that?
Oh, I play when I'm kind of angry.
Mm-hmm.
And pound on the table, no.
Yeah.
And then sometimes if I'm tired and it's been a long day and I just can't deal with it, I just say, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I go both ways with
yeah,
that.
Good.
But then somehow there's the subtle feeling that's left afterwards about myself that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
It's negative. I mean, it's...
Yucky. Yeah. Good. So that's good because we were using the example of anger as something that... we believe is worth disconnecting for. But equally, if not more, we also find ourselves believing that lack of confidence or something like that is, or fear or whatever, is worth disconnecting for. Doing what someone else wants is worth disconnecting for, and it's not. So staying connected anyway, even when I'm tired, and saying no, or when I'm very much connected. Also, it can happen that I see situations coming and I don't even have to get to the person's face to say no. Like, it's so much my connection leading me away from that. Hello, pen, hello, rickshaw, hello, chocolate, hello, whatever. Carpet, etc. So it's actually the same situation. There's connection, and then there's something that we habitually give abandon ourselves for. So it feels like outside pressure. Someone's trying to persuade me, and my habit is to be persuaded. But the connection doesn't want to be persuaded, we could say. So what helps us have connection to our resources, even in the face of, and I would say India is nothing compared to the Western advertising magnates. Nothing. They're so good and slick in the West. It's harder to see it coming. But whatever, it doesn't matter who's better at tricking. What's interesting is the possibility that staying connected helps us see trickiness in whatever way. Then there's times where it's not just... my habit pattern of being tricked, but my honest, courageous, breathing love of life took me to the streets of Paris and I got arrested. And that's the here and now for 6 months. So again, like being very careful about how easy it would be to blame ourselves if we see that we got tricked again. We can see the cause and effect of habit pattern getting triggered and we fall again. We disconnect again. We allow our conditioning. We say, okay. And sometimes there are situations that we don't know the cause and effect. And we can't say whose fault it is. It would not be worthwhile to spend time in that, perhaps. Saying yes to life doesn't mean saying yes to a particular person. not quarreling with life doesn't mean not quarreling with the rickshaw wala. So I like how you said to play that I was angry. Yes.
I had very strong anger experience today that actually drove me off the property, up the road, bought a cigarette, smoked it, and came back.
Good.
And this is day 4 of not smoking, and that's
woo.
Yeah. So
it's her 4th day of not smoking, except for this one cigarette today.
So that was, I mean, my button got pushed a few times. And it was, I mean, it's really funny in a way,
mm-hmm.
but I'm sort of living in a house close to the construction site and sleeping on a porch away from the construction site. And the toilet and wash room there is in the middle of this construction zone, and there's like, you know, mud and guck and rubble, and you know, so I went to the pile of broken tiles that they had been using, and I started to make a little pathway. Just, I thought, well, it was fun for one, you know, and
yeah.
I was just enjoying the process, and thought, won't it be nice not to be stepping in mud going to the toilet or the wash room. So after lunch, I came back, and the big pieces of tile, broken tile that I'd placed, had been taken away by the construction site.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into an inner rage. And I thought, like, this is just disgusting. This whole, you know, it doesn't have to be that disgusting. I mean, it can very simply be made pleasant. So I thought, okay, do I go to the managers? No, I don't feel like that much conversation. Do I go to the teachers? No, it's not their responsibility. So I went right to the, I don't know her name, the woman who owns the place, and just asked, you know, as brief a conversation as I could, and she was very gracious and apologetic. She says, it's my fault. I had them taken away. I have a better plan for the area. And then she proceeded to actually bring these big slabs of, you know, stone and lay them down there. And it's much better than anything I could have created. But it was like, I was just blown away by the pure energy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I didn't want to push it away, you know, I wanted to acknowledge it and experience it, but it was a little bigger than I could contain.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that's where I felt the
egolessness.
In that moment, there was nothing else, really. But
this is Papaji's mafia.
Mm-hmm.
This is Papaji's mafia, so we can say Chitrama's mafia because she's alive, so she keeps it going. Yeah. And that's joining the mafia, is being blown away by the power of one's own anger in that moment,
yeah.
And being interested in it.
Yeah.
So the
feel like mine.
Exactly.
Like it actually just felt like this.
Did you hear what you just said?
Yeah.
Okay. She said, it didn't feel like mine. Yeah.
It's kind of like this fire had been lit, and then I carried it.
Yeah.
To this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's good. I wanted to talk about the mafia of the emotions.
Mm.
Also. So exactly, interest in the moment, if possible. The kind of muscle that can be developed is that there's less and less interest in indulging it in any way, but there's, which maybe is why there can be more and more interest in why even the slightest energy can turn into that fire. And it's much more interesting when I could see that maybe it's not all about me. So we could feel the aliveness of that experience. So the muscle can be like the muscle of the interest, which is a very poor word. Let's say it feels to me like I want to drink the real, the reality of the experience. Usually it would be like, this is not possible. After so many years of experience, of meditation experience, how can I be blown away by my own anger? How is it that I'm going to smoke a cigarette, etc.? But we can, like, disobey our obedience. It's so much not about looking a certain way. As we can see in the world, it doesn't look the way we think it should look. There's the construction, there's the mud. And what a nice idea to put a path. Is there any question so far?
At the beginning?
Yeah.
Is there, when you're building up the muscle?
Yeah.
Is it kind of crucial to put a guard around your understanding of love of life, per se, so that you don't so easily get washed away or pulled with it?
Good. Yeah. Could you hear?
No.
She said in the beginning, but we could say usually. Is it a good idea to kind of protect our connection to life? Yes, with our life. Yeah. And what I find is we don't need to go looking for challenge in the sense of creating a situation that's going to make us angry. It's going to happen. And when it's actually happening is plenty. Then it's time to really, let's go into it. And actually, not even always. It's not always that we want to go looking into every single negative emotion. Because the connection to life is so much more interesting. But when that's what is going on, good.
What do you mean by saying protect?
Okay. Could you give an example of how you have protected your connection to life? The question was, what do we mean by protect this connection to life, or love of life, or light, as Jacques calls it?
I don't want to use the word control, but it sometimes feels like that. Like foreseeing what will happen before it does, and so stopping it there. And
foreseeing what kind of thing? If you give any specific example.
Seeing that if I do A, it will automatically equal B, even though my mind is trying to convince me that it won't.
Good.
So, stopping it before A happens.
Okay. Okay.
What if A is supposed to happen?
If
why to protect this?
So, another way to say maybe the same thing is, I know that my preference or my habit is to be afraid to speak in a group of people. So at first, maybe I don't speak in a group of people at all. Then life asks me to speak to a group of people. And so how do I manage that? Different kinds of protection. Sometimes avoiding a situation until there's enough muscle. Sometimes letting A, B, A, B, A, B happen again and again. Sometimes saying it's only a thought. Sometimes, etc. So, what?
Oh, it's 1-2-1-2.
Yeah. Okay. So not trying to look good is extremely important. Also not trying to look bad, but especially not trying to look good. And when it feels like an authentic experiment, we can disobey our obedience. We can really cross the current of our habits. One very brief example that's similar to what Lorraine G was saying was I was on a long retreat that was sitting and observing sensations, telling oneself a noting of each thing that was happening. And eventually, it was not helping me connect. But with a lot of sense of failure, and at the same time, no other way, I just would go to my room, lie on my bed, and do love meditation. And that kind of step is very important. Disobeying my obedient, my good little retreatant who was sitting, who was observing in, out, intention to whatever. But again, what helps us find our resources that help us disobey?
What does it mean, disobey?
Okay. Like break the rule. And this also, what this also means, which is more, maybe more scary, even, more scary even than not bothering about what it looks like, is not believing in enemies. And this was something in the interview group today that I was happily shocked when several people started talking about the same thing, noticing on the retreat how easily the mind, or how the mind does make the people I like the good people, the people I don't like the bad people. And then I know, then I feel like I'm here and I know how to manage, even if I can't remember exactly like what time the guided meditation is or whatever. But I have my gap in which I can negotiate my way. And this is pulling us into the exterior. And one woman pointed out how it makes me blind to that other person, whether that person is a good person or a bad person to me. It's, I think, very challenging to let ourselves just sit there without that gap around us. And if we could take challenge not as a sign of failure. I think another thing that happens is we start to, our idea of our spiritual destiny is to get beyond challenge. Somewhere where eventually God loves me so much that he won't challenge me anymore, this kind of belief. Or I'm so, we can say other many different kinds of language, I'm so in love with life that she's always kind to me. And what Jacques is talking about is seeing life's kindness in being physically blind, in being in a police state, in the much more common small moments where it's my own police state inside me, or my own blindnesses. And what Jacques talks about, when we do accept this challenge of really being participating in life without this moat around us. A moat is the castles that maybe still sometimes have the channel of water all around with maybe crocodiles inside or piranhas or depending on where you live, monsters inside. And we see that life is not a fortress. We see that it is not order. We see that the beauty of life has something to do with it not being completely orderly. With it, how it comes into challenge. I mean, just looking at the trees to start with. Looking at the challenge, the ways the challenges and the tree have come together. And that could help us accept what it looks like when we participate in life.
Can you share a story?
Yeah.
In the gardening group, we spent 2 days digging holes, and today we planted the churro, or the bush, or whatever it was, the flower. And the last instruction was to make a little moat around plant so that the water would stay, you know, inside where it needed to be. And it was a little bit confusing, well, do we use stones or bricks or no, just, you know, make a little with your hands or, you know, just make a little ridge around it. So we were very carefully, you know, making this thing very cautiously. And then one of the guys from the construction site did the last one. And what he did was just jump inside the ring and start pounding with his feet all around. And this had the effect of building up the soil around the root and creating a wall around the tree. And it was just kind of remarkable that actually this something that might look kind of destructive maybe or not careful or caring did exactly the thing that was needed to come up with growth of it.
Cool. Good. So yeah, like Jamie was saying, sometimes we need a moat around the little connection to life. But sometimes the moat gets made in different ways. And sometimes we can, the tree is big enough not to need a moat. So just, again, this idea of joining the mafia. So when there's people outside that we think are evil or whatever. Construction workers or whatever. And especially the parts inside us. Even the parts that we would like to disempower. It can happen so well when we really like join into the situation. We join the person. We feel how we are joined, how it's not one person's anger. Yes.
I know the service is what you call joining the mafia, being angry and blood comes and tells you, gives you just another reason to be more angry. And my way to deal with this anger is to notice that I'm angry and that it's kind of what was happening just now. I'm really angry. And what I realized is the only thing that I can do, I cannot act out of anger. Mm. Kind of the only joys I have, sometimes it happens anyway, but I can kind of, yeah, like keeping still, waiting on the weather is changed, it will change for sure. I'm not acting out of this anger, but this makes exactly what you said. I start to not to act out of this anger. I make this wall around you now.
Yeah.
So this is because for sure sometimes people look at me and say, oh, what's with you? But later on, because I make this wall around me, or this gap, whatever, just not to be acting out of this anger. I don't know better way.
Yeah, okay.
To deal with it, even with realizing there's anger, maybe it's bullshitty anger, could laugh about it if I wouldn't be so angry, but still it's there, and if I act, I generally make things worse.
Worse, yeah.
Yeah.
Good. What I could suggest is, like, sometimes what we can do is just keep ourselves from acting out of anger so that it doesn't get worse, and that's quite good. And sometimes we can find our resources to, and the situation may allow us, as on retreat, for example, to feel more intimately the anger as one option, that it is allowed to be, that it is not only about you and your anger. It's an experience, an energy that is common, that joins us. That it's okay if it's visible, because when there's anger, and even when I'm putting the moat, usually it is kind of, it's probably much better than if I think I'm right and I, like, go crazy with it. But even when I'm managing my best not to act out of it, it's usually kind of sparking around a bit. So it's visible anyway, so a little bit more leeway in experimenting with feeling the experience. As an experience that is not, that doesn't need to be blamed. It's not an experience that puts you out of life. It's an experience that can help you put your plug into life. So that's why I'm talking about this connection to life. From the connection to life, sometimes it's interesting to feel how the anger separates me or unplugs me. Sometimes I don't want to know, I just want to plug back in. And I'll figure it out later. And that's the kind of muscle that I'm especially interested in mentioning today. So sometimes it's really worth being very interested. Hunting, that's what I mean, hunting the challenge. What's this triggering of this anger about? How does that work? What's behind it? Where is it going? How does it work if I give a little more space? What happens if I really lie down and let it be as if it's neither good nor bad? What happens this? What happens that? No, as a feeling, as an authentic, real, honest investigation, that is sometimes helpful. But maybe 20% of the time, and 80% of the time, just if I can connect, even if the anger is still there, but I'm connecting. I love life anyway. I love life. It's okay. Letting that fountain come back. So one reason that we really suggest feeling the lower belly whenever we remember is it's, in a way, often a place that we can feel that really, like, plugging into the fountain of life. And then it comes up and it starts to fill. And when we see clearly that the anger or the easily persuadedness that Lenny was talking about, or whatever, shyness, fear, how that is just the unplugging from the fountain. How that is like blinding myself. Then I just want to go back to where I can see first. And then let's figure out how to be with the anger if it's still there. So let there be a bit of struggle, a little more leeway to struggle a little bit. And not only like the one way that you have. That's a great base. Like, there's anger, I notice it. Okay, let's just contain. From that base, a little more experimentation now, I would suggest. What can help us experiment is not believing I need to look good, not believing I need to follow a rule. From this connected place, as also was in the class yesterday, there's not a wish to harm. The anger isn't taking over there. And this connection to life also is not against the anger. So we need to end now. We just have a few minutes together to feel and digest. May we live knowing that whether we are right or wrong, this connection to life is more fun, more interesting, more free. May we participate fully in this life. And may our participation be a momentum towards awakening everywhere. Thank you for listening. Thank you for participating.